is a huge step forward for more than 1.2 million workers.
It's more women than not. It's more persons of color or not. It includes lots of college graduates.
We've talked long enough about putting New Jersey on a responsible path to $15 an hour minimum wage. Today, we start our way on this path.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, and I'm joined here in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening, Governor. Great to have you here.
Nancy, nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
And we're pleased to give New Jersey residents the opportunity to ask you their questions. Listeners, what do you want to hear from Governor Murphy? If you'd like to ask a question, the number to call is 844-677-9283. That's 844-677-9283. And we also have WBGO and WHYY's Statehouse reporter Joe Hernandez is here, and he's taking questions via social media. So tweet your questions for Governor Murphy by using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So right off the bat, big day today for you. Let's talk about two things that you did. Happy news and sad news. You can start with which one you'd like to.
Listen, I want everyone to, it's great to be back, Nancy. I want everyone to join me in remembering a lost soldier, a young guy named Jamie Riley from Fairhaven, who was a Red Bank Catholic grad, private first class in the U.S. Army, who passed away in a training accident last week. God rest his soul. It's a reminder that the burden of standing up for our country and fighting for it falls on very few in our society. I also had the honor of being one of the elected leaders presiding over deployment of our National Guard today.
Where are they going?
They're going to Djibouti in the Horn of Africa, about 183 men and women. We sent them off today. They're going via Texas, where they'll get further training. But they were there with their families, and again, it's a reminder. God bless those who serve and protect our freedoms every day.
And on to the happy news. One of your top priorities when you campaigned and all the work you did last year was raising the minimum wage. And today you got to sign that bill, and I know you're happy about it. What kind of impact do you think this is going to have on the state?
Big day for New Jersey, Nats, on this one. This impacts over a million workers. It impacts indirectly about 500,000 children. Minimum wage right now in New Jersey is $8.85. If you get two household income, two dependents, you can't even see the poverty line. You're way below the poverty line. This will begin at long last that road to $15 an hour. It'll begin with $10 an hour on July 1st. So you go from $8.85 to $10 this July 1st. It'll go to $11 an hour on January 1st of next year, and then a dollar more each year. It's a huge game changer, and we had to bust through so many myths that said it was mostly teenagers, it would raise the unemployment rate, it'd do all sorts of harm, and the fact of the matter is there's no evidence of any of that. It's mostly adults. It disproportionately impacts women, communities of color, lots of folks with college degrees or actually going to college and trying to pay for it. It's a game changer for our state, and it's a historic one. We got it done with the legislature. I salute them and their leaders. Activists and groups and unions who have been pushing this for years. It was a big victory.
Okay, and we were soliciting questions with reporters out on the ground, and we have Liz in Fairhaven has a question about the minimum wage.
My question is the concern for certain kinds of small businesses, especially in places like Bayhead or Point Pleasant Beach, when they have seasonal workers, some of the small businesses are really anxious about how are they going to be able to compete if their curve of bringing up the $15 wage is slower, which is to help them make ends meet. How can they be competitive in getting employees?
Listen, Liz's point is one that we had to take into consideration, and it's a fair one. So one word I've used in terms of how this was structured and the bill I signed is it's responsible. It phases it in over a number of years. It does take into account things like seasonal workers, farm workers. Everybody ultimately gets there, but they get there perhaps in a different configuration and at a different time. And we took into account small businesses, particularly the small true mom and pop small businesses with a handful of employees. I'm encouraged by the data from other places that have done this before us, that a lot of the concerns are able to get ironed through. Particularly if you don't do it overnight. And so that's one thing I always was committed to. There'll be no sticker shock. We still think the Jersey Shore, and Liz's point's a good one, the Jersey Shore will still be a magnet for seasonal workers. I'm confident of that. Again, I'm incredibly excited that we've started this path.
Now, farm workers get an increase, but a smaller one, and they ramp up slower than other workers, right?
Yeah, they get to over time to $12.50, and then we've got a mechanism in place to make sure that that's working, and they ultimately do get to $15. And importantly, and this is another word that folks need to keep in the back of their minds, everybody gets to parity, meaning you don't just get to $15, but you ultimately catch up to where the other workers are going because there's an inflation-adjusted annual increase to the minimum wage, so even beyond $15, and they ultimately get there.
And so with the farm workers, is there a concern that if farm worker wages aren't competitive with other, unskilled labor wages, as those get the bump up, a bigger bump up. Are farmers going to have a hard time finding workers to work on their farms?
Well, this is a little bit of the variation of the question Liz asked for the shore, shore businesses. And given the reality of both the farm industry in our state, which, by the way, is booming. They don't call us the Garden State for nothing, as well as our shore economy. I'm confident that this bill that we signed will provide the right road forward in both of those instances.
Okay, we have a caller on the line who wants to ask a minimum wage question. Matthew in Camden, you're on the air with the governor.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Matthew, how are you, man?
Great. I appreciate being able to speak with you.
My honor. Likewise.
And my question is more of a general question because I come from a very rural, I'm from upstate New York, and I come from a very rural background. And a lot of people who I grew up with are like masons and contractors and landscapers and this type of thing. And they make $17 an hour. And a lot of the blowback against minimum wage is from people who are saying, like, I worked very, very hard to learn this skill to make $17 or $15 an hour. Why should a fast food worker make the same as me? And I think, how do you advocate to those people and say America in general needs a raise and this isn't a threat to them and we need everybody to kind of get a bump?
Hey, Matthew, I think that's incredibly astute question and well put. And my answer is there's no reason we can't have both. So there's no reason why, I'm a huge believer, for instance, in apprenticeship programs. The unions in this state have been huge proponents on the building trade side of investing in workforce development and across the board in supporting $15 minimum wage. I can't get over the fact that at the current minimum wage, you're below the poverty line, and you're not just barely below it, you're dramatically below it. So we just can't. It's New Jersey. It's America, the year 2019. That just can't go on. And there's no reason why you can't have both of those, that the folks who have gone through some sort of an apprentice training program can't continue to earn more over time as they deserve it and they earn it and they do, as well as at the same time increasing the minimum wage from far below poverty levels to something that at least gives you a fighting chance. By the way, there's no one who says there's nirvana at $15, but it's a heck of a lot better. The annual amount, by the way, I just want to say this to make sure Matthew hears it, but everybody listening, right now, minimum wage earns you about $18,000 a year. $15 an hour will get you to $31,000 a year. Again, you're not in the promised land, but at least you've got a fighting chance.
Okay. Well, callers, if you have a question for the governor, we are taking your calls. 844-677-9283. Or you can tweet your questions using the hashtag Ask Gov Murphy. And State House reporter Joe Hernandez is with us now. He's taking your social media questions. Let's go to Joe. I think he's got a question for you, Governor.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, Governor. This question is from Michael Callahan. He says, is there any way that New Jerseyans can help you make the public bank idea from your platform a reality? The concept is wonderful and could help address many of the fiscal and economic issues in the state.
Maybe you should start by explaining what that
yeah,
is, the public
I just have
bank.
I have to acknowledge that Murphy's going to answer a question from Callahan. That's always got a little bit of poetry to it. Listen, it's a great question, and it so happens I've got a big, important internal meeting on this literally tomorrow, and I just went over
good
my
timing.
Notes driving here. So this is good timing, Michael. The public bank is an idea that I first and some friends of mine encouraged me to study deeply in North Dakota, of all places, where it basically works with community banks. That's a big important point. But instead of sending our deposits when people pay their taxes and they sit in our accounts and wait for the expenses at the state to be paid, right now they all get sent to big Wall Street banks if they're not in community banks here. I want them to stay in New Jersey, and that money to stay in the form of lending out to student loans at reasonable rates, or small-scale infrastructure loans, or small business loans. I love the idea still. It turns out it's harder to get off the ground than I thought, but we're not giving up. Someone recently put out a list of 52 promises we made in the campaign trail, and I think with minimum wage, we're up to 46 or 47 achieved. One of the few left is the public bank, and I'm committed to getting that up on the boards. But again, some of these are proving more challenging than others. But it's an idea that I think is really smart for New Jersey, in particular for students who are burdened by extraordinary loans. So the small business that can't get that loan, I continue to love this idea.
And since we're talking about student loans, how are the plans going with the community colleges and the free tuition? And I know that you've already instituted some of that,
yep.
But give us an update on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so again, I'm glad you asked that. We got the first tranche. So our long-term objective, and this is economic dependent, right? So I worry particularly with our president, honestly, who's really doing untoward and needless harm to our economic stability as a country. We have to be careful with that context and adhere to what we can afford to do. But our objective is to make pre-K through an associate's degree in New Jersey free of charge over a period of time. And we took our first steps in this year's budget. I'll leave pre-K for another discussion, but the progress there is also terrific. But we have this past month 13,000 on a needs-based basis. So we started with the folks who needed the money the most, adjusted gross income of $45,000 or less, folks who couldn't cobble together the money they needed to go to a county or community college. We got 13,000 students of all ages and backgrounds to go to community college free of charge. And we would really love to see that number grow over time. Every one of the county colleges is participating in a sort of publicizing this. 13 of the county colleges were accepted into the program. They're all eligible again next year. We love the idea. It fills what we think will be the biggest gap in our workforce as we build the innovation economy, and that's that so-called middle-skilled worker who's got education, who's trained up, who's extremely qualified. We just don't have enough of them. Computer science is a big example. We have about, a couple of years ago, 23,000 openings, 1,100 kids who had graduated with a computer science degree. This gets right at that.
So we have tape that is about the community college funding.
Hi, Governor Murphy. My name is Arlene Flynn. I'm from Tinton Falls. I'd like to know, how do you think all the New Jersey taxpayers who have already paid for their children to go to college are expected to pay for all these other children plus illegal immigrants to go to college as you want to make it free college for everyone? It's just not fair.
Okay, well, I think, Arlene, and by the way, I don't live too far from you. I'm right down the street in Middletown. I would just say I'm not going to accept the complete basis or premise of your question. And I particularly recoil at the illegal immigrants piece because I assume you're referring to the Dreamers, who I view are as every bit as American as my four kids. And we indeed made not just access to in-state tuition this year available to them, but in-state financial aid. And they deserve it. They are, as they say, they are here. They are every bit as American as my four kids. I would just say, Arlene, these are folks, I mentioned this, these are folks that we are giving access to community college who are in an economic strata that just literally can't afford it. So $45,000 of adjusted gross income in your household puts you at a very, very low rung in terms of our income strata in our state. You also have to meet very stringent criteria. I'll give you an example. You have to have exhausted every other source of financial aid, including federal Pell Grants. You have to keep your grades up. You have to be in school for at least half or more time. This is not just sort of throwing candy off the back of a truck. These are worthy individuals. They're every bit as American as the rest of us, and it will fill a huge gap in our workforce going forward.
Listeners, we want to hear from you, and if you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We have got a call from David, from Vineland.
Hello.
Hey, David, how are you?
Governor Murphy, how are you?
I'm very well,
sir.
First
and foremost, I want to commend you for the wonderful job that you're doing and the minimum wage and all the great things in New Jersey. It's just so refreshing to have you as our governor. I did have the chance very briefly that I met you at the Landis Theater in Vineland.
Oh, I love that place. Thank you.
I will give you my question. I'm concerned about the cost of living adjustments, which really should have been grandfathered in. I had spent my whole working career in state service and loved every bit of it. Was very, very dedicated and worked in the area of developmental disabilities and administration. But what I'm concerned about, with the stroke of a pen, Governor Christie took away our cost of living adjustments. Be very honest with you, I'm living probably on less $200 less or so a month, you know, and things continue to rise. New Jersey is a costly state to live in, and many of the retirees, and I speak for the vast majority of my colleagues and so on, you know, we're put in a precarious position. We love this state very, very much. But
David, we need a question from you. We're running out of time before our break. So,
yeah, are you going to reinstate the COLAs, the cost of living adjustments?
David, first of all, it's good to hear your voice, and I appreciate the good words that you said in my way. This is one that is really frustrating. This was taken away from you as part of something called Chapter 78 in the year 2010. And the part, and it's hard to get this put Humpty Dumpty back together again because it's now a very significant amount of money, and we inherited a state a year ago that was in a financial meltdown. So the spirit is willing, the wallet is having a hard time finding it. But the really tragic part of this is it gets talked about in the aggregate. You know, it saved X billions of dollars. And you know what? I feel like nobody's ever sat down with a guy like you, David, and said, literally, this is what it means to me. This is spread across thousands and thousands of retirees. It's the X factor in their being able to, and David, in your case, you're being able to stay above water. So it really, it bothers me to the core. We've got to try to find a way to get this back together. The problem is, again, we inherited a mess. We never should have been going down this path in the first place. But keep the faith, and we'll do everything we can to get our best to do our best to get this state back on its feet.
Okay, folks, if you have more questions, the number is 844-677-9283. And we'll definitely be talking more about pensions and the state funding problems coming up. I'm Nancy Solomon, and you're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in downtown Newark at the studios of WBGO with Governor Phil Murphy. Now, let's talk about the hiring of Al Alvarez, because this continues to be a question that has been risen by the legislature and by the investigation that you've initiated. To update our listeners, this is a man who worked on your campaign and is accused of raping a woman who was a supporter of the campaign and then volunteered on the campaign. Both of them got jobs in your administration, and Alvarez did not resign until the story broke in the Wall Street Journal. And you've said that you didn't know what had happened until after that story broke. But the big question recently has been, who hired him? And, you know, we've had a series of your top staffers come and talk to the legislators, and nobody seems to be able to answer that question.
This is something that has been a heartbreaker for me personally and for my wife. And my wife was a victim of sexual assault, and justice was not served in her case. We found out about what Katie Brennan had wanted to speak to us about in October, and we were sick to our stomach. So we put in place three processes almost immediately, one of which has come to fruition, and two of which are still ongoing. And the two of which are ongoing is an investigation of what the heck happened. And that's being led by a former Supreme Court justice and chief counsel. And that process is still ongoing. And I'm exceedingly anxious to hear that and see and to read it. Separately, you know, folks think, and we sort of say this loosely, that we've got really good policies and procedures in state government in New Jersey relative to other American states. Well, you know what? I want to take a fresh look at that and make sure that's actually the case. I can't believe we can't be better than that. And so we've got a separate process being run by our EEO chief officer in the state. The one process that has come to fruition was led by the Attorney General. And that was in a much more holistic, how do we make New Jersey, in the awful case that someone is a survivor of a sexual assault or sexual crime, what is the environment like? What's the law enforcement environment like? What's the information and access like? And the Attorney General unveiled that some number of weeks ago, I think largely to a very welcoming reception. So I believe in those processes. Two of them are still ongoing, one of which has come to fruition. And as you mentioned, the legislature independently put forward their own process. And we've been cooperating with that completely. And we'll continue to do so, as I've said many times, as long as it's not political, as it takes a whole of government approach and is as survivor centric as we have been in our processes.
But yes or no question, do you know who hired Al Alvarez to work at the school development
authority? I'm anxious to see what the Peter Venero, the former Supreme Court justice report comes out with.
But isn't this a easily answerable question that would be at your fingertips? You ask your staff, who hired the guy?
Yeah, the answer is I don't know, and I want to wait to see what the report says.
Okay, listeners, if you have any questions about the Alvarez case, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. Let's go to Joe Hernandez on social media. I think we've gotten a question about the Alvarez case.
We did get a question about it. This is from Vicky Fox in Lawrenceville. She says, why haven't you fired those staffers who hired the accused rapist, did not fire him, and did not inform you of the accusation?
Well, to Vicky, I got to say that I have to wait until the process that we put in place plays out. And when I heard about this, as I mentioned a minute ago, I was completely sick to my stomach, and this is not abstract for my wife and me. She went through something that was awful, and when she was younger, and justice was not served. And so I have to say, Vicki, I am as anxious as anybody to get to the bottom of this. And I was asked a question a couple of weeks ago. The Middlesex County prosecutor had done a separate investigation or review of the original process, and I said three things. Number one, we have to stand with survivors and respect them. Number two, we have to respect law enforcement. And number three, we need a better state and a better environment for survivors. And I'd stand by those statements and those pillars that will continue to guide us going forward.
Okay, we have another caller on the line. Natalie in Moorestown, you're on the phone with the governor. Oh, did we lose her? I guess we did.
Moorestown is a very special place.
So we can move on to another favorite subject of yours, the winter weather. I call this from the Department of Damned If You Do and Damned If You Don't. There was a lot of criticism of the snowstorm in November when the plows couldn't get through the traffic and people sat in their cars for 4, 5, 6 hours to get home during the evening commute. And now you've become an avid fan of the brine the streets and the roads before the snow falls. We just had a storm that wasn't much of a storm. And so now the Sierra Club is saying, wait, that's salt brine is going to end up in our water supply. It's going to pollute water, I guess, is the main thing. So now the pendulum could swing back, or, you know, how do you deal with this?
It won't swing back. It isn't damned if you do it, damned if you don't. There's asymmetric risk. This is public safety. People's lives are at risk. You know, people talk about the November storm, and by the way, they were really frustrated. So was I. The job didn't get done, period, full stop. But the storm we just recently prepared for was probably the 8th or 9th since I've been governor. We had a whole series of them last winter. And so you're looking, and by the way, in fairness to the Sierra Club, we're the densest state in the nation. So getting the environment right matters. This is not you can't get a gentleman's sea on the environment. And I appreciate that and understand that. And our folks who prepare the brine, which I think is 80% water, have that in their front of mind as they think about it. I know I do. But these storms, first of all, I wish Mother Nature were really predictable. And in this day and age, it's going to get more and more unpredictable. And so we have to have our arms around a very wide range of possibilities and realities, including power outages, not just commuting, not just roads, but rails, flooding. You get a whole range of challenges. So if the choice is, and public safety is job number one, and if the choice is to underprepare and run the risk with a very volatile Mother Nature that we're going to have a series of public safety disasters versus somewhat over-preparing and preventing that from happening, I'm going to take door number two every time.
Okay. Well, we have a clip of tape from Johnny, who has a question related to roads.
My question is, why are the roads in such terrible condition? There's 78, there's 280, there's 109. The list can go on and on. All the major highways are all destroyed. I mean, from the weather, the salt that they use, and then they don't fix them.
Yeah, well, I appreciate Johnny's frustration, and I hope he was expressing that under the prior administration because they let the Transportation Trust Fund basically go bankrupt, another fiscal mess that we inherited. And so we're getting there. I mean, moving people and things around when you're in the densest state in the nation and you sit beside New York City, the largest market in the world in the north, and Philadelphia, the largest, one of the fastest growing markets in the country in the south, that ought to be ground zero of what you're doing as a state, right? Being able to have transportation infrastructure second to none, roads, bridges, rails, tunnels, the green economy, We're getting there, Johnny. I promise you that. We're getting the roads fixed. We're fixing NJ Transit. I'm shocked, Nancy, that we're almost a half an hour into the show and you haven't asked me about NJ Transit.
I promise.
Assume it's coming. But that stuff is getting fixed. But Rome wasn't built in a day. And we inherited a mess and we're turning it around. And there's real progress. That's the good news. There's real progress being made. And again, we're going to get back to the state. And by the way, it's not Democrat or Republican. This is not ideological. It's if you're that dense and you're that well located, you better darn well be able to move people and things around better than anybody. And that's the state we're going to be again.
Well, we might as well talk about New Jersey Transit. No need to wait.
I know you couldn't wait. You were chomping at the bit there.
You rode one of those special trains where you can actually see what's going on inside the tunnel a week or two ago. So tell us what that was like. And I know I've spoken with you about some of the progress that's been made in your fixing and remaking of New Jersey Transit. So tell us about both things.
So I'll tell you, I'll take the last, the latter first. NJ Transit a year plus ago was underfunded, wrong management, wasn't achieving the federal safety requirements, was running out of engineers. And we've turned the curve back on all four of those things. And again, it doesn't happen easily. It doesn't happen overnight. Folks who take the Atlantic City line are still frustrated. That's been shut down. I know the Dinky in Princeton. We had to do that, but we're going to get those and other services back up to snuff. So the stuff we can control, I can see clear visibility on where we're headed, and I love the progress we're making. You mentioned the train visit we took with our federal delegation, including both Senators Menendez and Booker, and a bunch of the House members. We desperately need, and by the way, I take my hat off to New York and the Port Authority and the Gateway Corporation. We're all in this together, but we need the federal government. We've got train tunnels under the Hudson River that were built in 1910. Obviously, they're old. There's a debate whether Taft or Teddy Roosevelt were the president. We'll settle that later. They're 109 years old, and they were damaged dramatically in Superstorm Sandy. The Obama administration has said, you know what, we'll come up with half the money to build a new tunnel under the Hudson and rehabilitate things like this, the Portal Bridge and other elements of that. The Port Authority, New Jersey, New York would come up with the other half. We're good for that. We need desperately the Trump administration to step up. The logic is overwhelming, not just for New Jersey, but for New York, for the entire Northeast Corridor. Nancy, you've heard me say this before, 20% of the nation's economy relies on this link. We took that train to see it with our own eyes, to make the point as explicitly as possible. We've got skin in the game. Some of this is shovel ready.
What did you see, though? Did you see, like,
rocks
coming
down?
You betcha.
You see rocks coming down. I'll tell you the big thing I saw, because I think our folks who maintain this, and I give shout-outs for all the frustrations people have, the engineering and maintenance feats that are accomplished regularly with 109-year-old tunnels cannot be underestimated. There are two reactions I had. I still can't believe Governor Christie canceled the ARC tunnel, because that would be open as we sit here today.
And he didn't even mention it in his book.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I wouldn't know, because I haven't read it and probably won't. But we're going to pay a price for that decision for a long time. The second reaction, even putting aside the crumbling, is how the range, the number, the spectrum of tracks narrows to so few. It narrows to two, in and out of under the Hudson. And you go from a wide span as close in as Newark, and then you go through things like the Portal Bridge and other connectors, and it keeps skinnying down and skinnying down. So it's not only old, we need more of them. And the data, I forget the numbers, but the data of the amount of people who use these trains in 1910 versus 2019 is algorithmic scale different. And so for all the above reasons, we're going to keep pounding away. Our federal delegation, as has recently been reconfigured in the November election, is a collection of rock stars. I'm going to be down in Washington a couple of times this month. This is going to be my highest priority. We've got to get the federal government to step up and help us.
Okay, and I think we're getting lots of questions on social, so let's go back to Joe Hernandez. What do you have, Joe?
Here's a question from Fran Carroll in Hamilton. Would you support a measure to move up the New Jersey state primary in 2020 for the presidential election and possibly even future elections so New Jersey voters' voices can be heard? We are tired of the primary race usually being effectively over with the majority of candidates having dropped out by June.
Yeah, Fran, it's a very good question, and I've been asked it with increasing frequency on the past couple of weeks, and I would color myself as open-minded to that. I wouldn't want it to have unintended consequences, as I know some folks worry about. But I am, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, we're the 11th largest state in the nation, and in many respects, we punch at a much higher weight, particularly in our political heft and throw weight. Historically, I'm a proud Democrat. Historically, I have to say, in both parties. New Jersey's voice deserves to be heard in a national process like this. I'm even more smitten by the idea because we got our friend, a guy I've endorsed instantly out of the blocks, Senator Cory Booker, running for president, which makes, frankly, for me, even more compelling. But I want to make sure, so Fran, I'm open-minded. I like the first sort of first-cut reasons as to why you'd want to do it. I want to make sure there's no hidden or unintended consequences associated with it. I want to make sure New Jersey's voice in the national scene, particularly in this process, the presidential, is heard loud and clear.
Let's squeeze in one last topic before we go to a break.
You want to go back to New Jersey Transit?
We have a call, so we're going to go to Kate from Medford.
Hi, Governor Murphy. My name is Kate McLaughlin, and I am a nurse in New Jersey.
Hey, Kate.
I'm good. I have met you, and I've talked to you about safe staffing before.
Yep.
And I'm, you know, 17 years we have been trying to get safe staffing legislation in New Jersey like they have in California. It's cost effective. It reduces patient mortality rates in hospitals. It actually saves money. New Jersey has not been doing well, unfortunately.
Yep.
In 2015, every hospital in New Jersey, with the exception of one that had just recently reopened, was fined by CMS. And that actually lost about $23 million from New Jersey hospitals because of non-reimbursements. As your wife, Tammy, who I commend, and we are thrilled that she's working on maternal mortality, we're ranked 47th in the country. We're third from the bottom.
Yep.
So,
very bottom as it relates to racial disparity in infant and maternal mortality.
Absolutely. And as the executive director of NJ Safe Ratios, which is a collaborative group of nurses and patients, we've polled our nurses, and we're being told even in labor and delivery and maternal child, we're having these issues with unsafe staffing, which I've made you aware of, and I'm sure other people have as well, but also a lack of training. And I thank the Senate and Assembly Joint Committees for putting out such wonderful bills that we really need the DOH to talk with the bedside nurses.
So, Kate, I need a question because we only got a minute here before we go to break.
How do you help get this bill moved? I've spoken to Sweeney. I've spoken to Coughlin. There doesn't seem to be any move with Assemblyman Conaway. How do we get this moved? We had patients, 11 children died because of unsafe staffing as one of the reasons up in Wanacue.
Yep.
What do we
So let me just quickly jump in. Those are all, Wanacue is also obviously a tragedy, but a different, somewhat of a different version of a tragedy, but a tragedy nonetheless. I'm going to have our health commissioner, Dr. Sharif El-Nahal, Kate, reach out to you. Literally, all of our cabinet is listening. I'm going to have him call you directly. I'm a big proponent of safe staffing. I've campaigned on it. I still believe in it. I can't create the bill. I need the bill to get to me. So I would say let's all try to figure out with the legislature how we do this together, and I'll have Dr. El-Nahal reach out to you directly.
We're going to take a quick break and be back with more of your calls and social media questions. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
We'll be right back.
listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon, and we're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in Newark with New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And I think, you know, what we left off with the last caller is you can't write the bills, you can't make the bills. They've got to get passed by the legislature and then come to your desk. An issue came up recently where Senate President Steve Sweeney says that he wants to cut pension and health benefits, cut those costs for the state budget. This is what he had to say on NJTV.
I would be willing to go anywhere in this state side by side with Governor Murphy and have a debate on this to see whether there really is a problem or not a problem. We have a financial crisis in this state. And for his administration to say we're blowing it out of proportion, Michael, we're going to have a $4 billion, you know, we're going to be in a hole $4 billion by 2023. You can't raise taxes enough to fix this now.
You chaired the commission that was set up to study the pension fund and the problems with the pension fund in 2005. So where do you agree with Senator Sweeney and where do you disagree? And then we can talk about the idea of a debate. But
so I just want to make the general comment that Kate alluded to, and we'll follow up on that. Today I signed my 201st bill. So we have found a lot of common ground working with the legislature. So I don't want to make it sound like, hey, by the way, we're all in and this has to be done jointly. But folks also do need to realize some things I can do by executive order and on my own. And there are a lot of things that I need to work with. And I think citizens should want it that way with the legislature. Driver's licenses for folks, regardless of their status, is an example of that. I'm all in for that, but I need help from the legislature in partnership.
Their immigration status.
Regardless of their immigration status, correct. And so I look forward to work with the leadership and sponsors. And those are two good areas. Safe staffing levels. Access to driver's license, good examples of that. Listen, Senator Sweeney has come up with a whole range of items that he either endorses or wants to see us to pursue. And I've said this publicly and I've said this privately to Steve. There's a range of those we don't agree on. And I don't have the whole list in front of me, otherwise I can't go through chapter and verse. There's a whole bunch we do agree on. And there's a bunch in the middle where I think it's worthy of discussion. You mentioned my chairing a task force back in 2005. I would also reference the group that Governor Christie put together, I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago. In both of those realities, there was one common denominator, and that is the shortfall in the pension plans is the state's fault, period. And that's from the commission I chaired as well as the commission that was supported by Governor Christie. So I've got a real fundamental issue. If we're the quintessential middle-class state, which we are, and folks who are public sector employees are quintessentially in the middle class, I have a hard time turning to them again when we've left them at the altar for year after year after year and say, listen, sorry, you're going to have to pick up the bag for this. I do think that there's a lot of progress we can make on more efficient delivery of health care to employees, to everybody in the state, not just to public sector employees. And we've made very good strides early on, and I think we can make a lot more in addition to that. But I like having everyone, all the stakeholders around the table, including the leadership of those unions. We've already, a few months ago, announced savings that come close to $500 million over the next two fiscal years just by more efficiently delivering health care. What I don't want to see is either somebody having to pay more and so they're taking home less or accept less quality health care than they deserve. I don't think that's the right way to rebuild the middle class. And so I think those are all good, healthy discussions to have. I'm going to present my budget in a month or so, and I've said this privately to the Senate president, and I think we've both said it actually publicly as well. Let's get through that process and see what that looks like, and then we'll figure out where we go from here. I'm a pro-growth progressive, and I'm proud of both sides of that. And I'm proud of the fact you can be both at the same time, a progressive and also focus laser-like on growing our economy. And that's what we try to do every day.
Another big issue in the state, in addition to problems with the state budget and the pensions, is, of course, the high property taxes. And this came up when I was doing a story about your first year in office, and business people and the chamber and Republicans want to know, okay, you know, what is the plan? What are you going to do
to
lower property taxes?
So a year plus ago, everybody was asking me, what are you going to do about the 2% cap? And I said, you know what? I feel like we've got a plan in place that will begin, and I say begin because we still have a property tax crisis, we'll begin to get at our crisis. Among other things, we have to grow the darn economy. I inherited a state that hasn't grown basically for 10 years. And so I spend most of my days focused on how to grow the economy. 2018 was the lowest increase of property taxes on record in the state of New Jersey. Folks, I don't think really understand that, and that's not the case in every community, but on average, it was the lowest increase on record. I don't want to sit here a year from now or two or three from now and talk about the lowest increase. I want to talk about decreases. So let's grow the economy. Let's fully fund public education, because when you do that, that's 53% of an average property tax bill. That takes the burden off that local community. Let's aggressively pursue shared services. That's something that Senator Sweeney and I both believe in. I've had a retired Democratic mayor and a retired Republican mayor as our co-shared services czars doing this up and down the state for the past 9 months. Let's make it easier for seniors to stay in their home. I applaud the Assembly Speaker, who was a big proponent of increasing the homestead rebate. So let's get at this program. And by the way, please God, can we collectively push back on this awful limitation at the federal level of state and local tax deductions that President Trump and his Republican enablers put in place. So for folks across the aisle in New Jersey, if they want to find a way to find common ground with what we're trying to do, it would be to push hard on Republicans in Congress and this administration to help us lift that cap and get us back to where we used to be, which was full deductibility.
I think the pain of that one is going to be felt come April when you have to pay your taxes.
Now,
so I think that'll be the first time people really see what its effect is.
I'll tell you what, though, if the Democrats take this, elections have consequences. With the House, we take the Senate in the White House in November of 2020. That goes away.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. I think it's a property tax question as well. Jacqueline from Englewood, you're on the line with the governor.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for your service, Governor.
How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to speak with you.
Likewise.
Good. I'm heading into my senior years, and I'm loving living in the Garden State, but I'm finding myself looking for states that don't heavily tax my retirement income the way New Jersey does. Is there any hope for seniors like me who would love to remain in the state?
Jacqueline, help is on the way. Bear with us and keep the faith. I mentioned I'm 61 years old, and so I think about the New Jersey demographics really in three buckets: the young people, and we got a whole series of steps that we're taking to keep them here. Too many of them leave after high school or after college. And we want to explode the innovation economy, incubators, startups, and make this a really jazz place to be. We continue to be a state of choice for folks who are working and are raising a family. And that's largely education and transportation. That's why our all-in focus on funding public education and keeping it among the top couple in the country and getting NJ Transit fixed, which we'll do if it kills me. That's why those things matter. And then Jacqueline, for the folks who may not be working or are coming close to retirement and may not have a child in school, where a big chunk of your property tax bill is public education, we need a whole different set of remedies. We got to grow the economy. We got to aggressively shared services. We got to fund public education so that percentage goes down in Englewood or whatever community you're in. We got to be better at those cushions like the homestead rebates, where you say, you know what? It's not the cheapest place in America for me to retire, but it's a fair deal. It makes sense for me to stay here. We have too many folks now who sell the house and leave, not because they want to, but because they have to. And again, this is a legacy of digging out of 10 years of no growth and a fiscal mess. We will get there, Jacqueline. It may not be overnight, but we're going to get there.
Okay, we have another call. We have Miguel from Woodbridge. You're on the line with the governor, Miguel.
Hi, Governor Murphy. Good evening.
Miguel.
Thank
How
you
are
so
you,
much
sir?
For your service.
Thank you, ma'am.
My question is in regards to rideshare companies and drivers. Just this week, New York City passed a law to raise the minimum wage for rideshare drivers. However, as a rideshare driver myself, we haven't seen nothing in regards to regulation for drivers here in New Jersey. Every day, there's hundreds and hundreds of drivers being added to the system's platforms as Uber and Lyft. And just recently, just this week, Uber decided to lower the fare for rideshare drivers. And a lot of us are taking a big hit in regards to our gains. We're not making a lot of money to begin with. And yet Uber is constantly doing things such as affecting us in terms of our earnings. So I'm wondering if there's anything in your plan to try to help a lot of rideshare drivers. And I will encourage you to just pass by the Newark Airport and see how many drivers there are. As a matter of fact, right now, there's about 300, 400 rideshare drivers waiting to move people around New Jersey, all over New Jersey.
Yep.
And there seems to be no regulation in regards to how these companies are treating the drivers in general.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Miguel, thank you. And Woodbridge is a great New Jersey community. So thank you for raising this. You know, this is, by the way, a fallout of the so-called gig economy. So when you don't invest in education and workforce development and you don't have a focus on building your innovation economy or your manufacturing or small business economy, you leave folks with no choice but to go off and try to cobble something together. And that's a reality, sadly, that another legacy that we're digging out of. So we're raising the minimum wage in New Jersey. So I got to figure out with my team as to how that is going to directly get to you, Miguel. I'm going to ask my Commissioner of Labor, Rob Angelo, who's listening, to track you down by tomorrow and just go through this explicitly. And I want to make sure we understand. You mentioned that Uber was sort of recutting the pie. I want to make sure we understand that and make sure that that's being done the right way, and also why increases in minimum wage aren't going to find their way to somebody like yourself. Again, I want to state, Miguel, where you've got five or six really juicy work alternatives, and you're in any of those alternatives, you're in a really structured, transparent, supportive environment. So Godspeed. I'm going to get Rob to reach out to you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And let's go to some of those tweeted questions now. Joe Hernandez, what have you got for us?
Here's a question from Jeremy Johnson of Newark. He says, funding for the arts has been flat for years. How do you plan to strengthen the arts industry in New Jersey?
Listen, this is a Jeremy, I'm speaking not just as the governor of New Jersey, but as a former actor, an amateur one at that. But it kills me. And I make the same darn mistake. I talk about the STEM investments, the innovation economy, all the time. The fact of the matter is any society will not be a full society, will not be an enriching society without the arts. No downtown, frankly, will be a fulsome downtown in any community without the arts. And we've done a lousy job flat out in funding the arts. We've had great private philanthropy and great private support for the arts. That's a comment you can make not just about New Jersey. This is an American phenomenon. I was the U.S. ambassador in Germany. And in Europe, the state supports about 90% of all the arts. The city of Berlin's annual arts budget is larger than the National Endowment of the Arts in the United States. So we try to find ways. I just mentioned the other day in a public event, we're reallocating over $13.5 million of federal title money into educational programs. And some of it was STEM, but I was happy to say, Jeremy, that some of it was in the arts. And we just got to find a way to do more of that, not just continue to promote the private and corporate philanthropy and foundations that have been so good to do that, but also to find more official government support. And it transforms communities. I live near Asbury Park. Asbury Park's a great example of a community that has been transformed by the arts. And so a work in progress, Jeremy, is the way I put it.
Okay, let's try to squeeze in one more call. Ellen from Keensburg, you're on the line with the governor. Hello, Ellen.
Hello.
Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for calling.
I live in Keensburg, New Jersey.
Yep.
And I was calling with a question about our school district and their funding. The government, the Jersey government, has reallocated funding throughout the school district.
Yep.
In my case, it is completely catastrophic. We will, over the next 6 years, lose one quarter of our funding, our entire budget.
Yep.
For us, that means this year alone, the possibility of 30 to 45 teachers being laid off, programs being cut. We already don't even have transportation in our district for students. I've actually been trying to reach out to you and to Senator Sweeney, trying to get attention on this, because we're having funding taken from us, and it's being redistributed to other areas like Lakewood and all that. We cannot, even if we raised taxes to the cap.
Yep.
Over 6 years, we would only generate about $600,000 for what will be over an $8 million cut. We need help with this. What can you do to help? How do we reverse this, at least? This is not just my district. This is a lot of the shore areas who still haven't recovered from Sandy.
I got it.
A lot of the coastal districts.
Yep.
We need help with this.
I hear you, Ellen. Listen, I hear you loud and clear. By the way, I live not, I wouldn't say a stone's throw. I don't live terribly far from you. So how are you going to reach me? I'm going to have the Commissioner of Education call you tomorrow. So that's the first step. Dr. Lamont Repelette. Secondly, what you've described is an awful reality. The good news, let me give you the good news. We put a lot more money into K through 12 school funding, and that's a process that's going to take a whole bunch of years. We have sort of had to update the school funding formula to look at the demographics of today, and demographics drive a lot of this. Is it growing? Is it not? Et cetera. As you said, the shore and the sandy communities have been particularly hard hit. There's a school in Old Bridge that has come up a lot lately and that breaks your heart. So we've also got emergency transition aid, which the commissioner can talk to you about. So keep, hang in there. Just want to say one thing. We lost Bab Sipperstein last night,
yes.
An LGBTQ extraordinary trans pioneer, a giant, but also importantly, a mom, a grandmother, a friend, a mentor, a small business owner. God rest Babs.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Governor Murphy, thanks for joining us tonight. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. The show was produced by Katie Colinari with help from Joe Hernandez, Ang Santos, Taylor Allen, Sean Bowditch, and Doug Doyle. And our executive producers, Amy Niles. Good night.